Welcome to the All Things Nintendo podcast. My name's Brian Shea, and I'm senior editor at Game Informer. This is a weekly show where we discuss the biggest news and games from Nintendo. Last week, we talked all about what might be next for the Super Mario franchise, but as we reach the end of the year, it's time to do what every other podcast on the planet is doing and look back at the year that was. Normally, I start my show with a guest, but today we're going to do things a bit different. A couple weeks ago, I attended the Game Awards out in Los Angeles, and by the time this episode hits, I'll be on the opposite coast, but I wanted to host my own little award show today. I won't have 40-plus world premieres, nor will I have Imagine Dragons performing, though maybe I'll try to get Sting or something. I do want to make sure I clarify that these are not the official Game Informer awards for the end of the year. If you want those, you can either check out our latest issue featuring Horizon Forbidden West on the cover, or head on over to GameInformer.com. You'll see all of like the end of the year awards over there, including our top 10 games of the year. These awards I'm going through today are specific to all things Nintendo, and as such, you might hear about games that came out last year, but as long as they made their way to Switch in 2021, they qualify. So here's how it's gonna work. I'm gonna list off the nominees for each category. Then, once I announce the winner, I'm going to invite one of my colleagues on to briefly talk about why the winner is deserving. That's pretty standard. 2021 was kind of a weird year in my eyes, like both Nintendo and gaming as a whole. When you look at the list of games that came out, there were so many great games, but in my eyes, none really elevated head and shoulders above the rest. That said, I think it makes everything so much more interesting for an award show such as this, because who knows, anything could win. Without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. We're going to jump right in here with the first category, Best Action Game. The nominees for Best Action Game and the All Things Nintendo podcast are Death's Door, Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection, Metroid Dread, No More Heroes 3, and Persona 5 Strikers. And the winner for Best Action Game is Metroid Dread. And to talk about the winner of Best Action Game, Metroid Dread, I'm bringing him back on, ladies and gentlemen. It's Ben Reeves. How's it going, Ben?
Hey, how's it going? Good to be here.
Going great. Best Action Game, Metroid Dread, the first award of the show. And I don't think there's a more deserving candidate on any list at this point, because Metroid Dread is just such a powerhouse in this category. Action game, it's basically the action game category personified. It's nonstop action. It's so much fun. Talk to me about why Metroid Dread is deserving of this award.
Yeah, well, like you said, Metroid Dread was, I think we knew before it was going to come out that we were all going to love it. You know, they announced it and they're like, wait, a new Metroid game? Mm-hmm. Okay. And a lot of us just immediately put it on the top of our best of list anyway. but, you know, I've played it. And so, like, to confirm that it is, yes, indeed, a great game. And it's Blood People had talked about how hard it was when it came out. And, you know, I think it's a little bit overblown. I think definitely the bosses serve up a decent challenge, and even just like the little guys you fight along the way, it offers a decent challenge, but that challenge is easy to navigate once you learn the patterns involved. And also that kind of speaks to how fun it is to play as an action game. It's a very rewarding game.
Yeah, and the moment-to-moment action is so satisfying, and like the loop of discovering new abilities and items and upgrades, and then immediately being able to use those to either defeat an enemy you weren't able to destroy before, or reach a new area, which has always been at the core of any Metroidvania experience. It's pretty clear why the Metroid series is still the king of this genre that emerged in its wake.
Right, and there's so many, you know, I've talked about this before, I think even on a previous episode of the show, but there's so many different types of Metroidvanias these days. So many people copying Nintendo's original formula, and so many unique takes on it. Like, there's some that do pinball, there's some that's like, it's like a Dark Souls version of this game, there's some that, you know, roguelikes, but Nintendo sticking to the original formula and still proving that you don't need any extra gimmicks or bells and whistles. Like, if you stick to the original formula and do it super, super well, it's still a really compelling game. Even, you know, 20 plus years, 25 plus years after the original Super Metroid released.
Absolutely. Ben, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to chat about Metroid Dread taking home the best action game of 2021.
Right. Thank you. Thanks, Brad.
Next up is Best RPG. The nominees for Best RPG are Disco Elysium, The Final Cut, Monster Hunter Rise, Monster Hunter Stories 2, Wings of Ruin, Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, and Shin Megami Tensei 5. And the winner is Shin Megami Tensei 5. Joining me now to talk about why Shin Megami Tensei 5 is the best RPG on Switch in 2021 is Daniel Tack. Dan, how are you doing?
Oh, it's great to be here today, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
It's your first time on All Things Nintendo, and we will have you back for an actual first appearance proper, and then we'll do first Nintendo game, favorite Nintendo game, and all that in the future. But for now, I want to get your opinion on why Shin Megami Tensei 5 is the clear-cut winner here for best RPG on Switch.
I mean, well, you can't play it anywhere else, so let's just start there. SMT has been a great series through its long history that, you know, gave us Persona. Mm-hmm. Persona is a spinoff of SMT. SMT's core gameplay is really great, and it shines really here on Switch. I will say that it doesn't run particularly well on Switch, but I think it's still a pretty good translation of what we've been playing on handheld for the last few games, you know, with Apocalypse and SMT4 on the 3DS. This really captures the flavor. I think it's the most accessible SMT for sure. It's got difficulty settings. And that's great to dive in, and you can really just like, it's just so fun as a creature collector, you know, make your own monsters, perfect to spec, all these awesome abilities. It's a very bizarre game, you know, as they all have been, really dives into a lot of stuff you don't see in video games, just like a really weird mix of dystopian apocalyptic future mixed with the occult. It's a very strange offering, honestly, for Nintendo in general. At least old Nintendo, you know, thinking about like this game would have definitely ruffled some feathers along in the 80s and 90s, along with, like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons kind of thing. Like, oh boy, what is this game where we're creating demons to fight for us? Man, that's weird, right? Yeah, it is, but it's really cool also, and very unique as a franchise.
And this was a pretty hotly contested, one of the more hotly contested categories, in my opinion. I mean, two Monster Hunter games came to Switch this year. You had Pokemon remakes and Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. And then Disco Elysium was also on Switch for the first time this year. So it was a pretty pretty stacked category. But SMT5 seems like the winner here, right?
I mean, for me, absolutely. Like, I'm still listening to the music. The OST is incredible for this game. And it just seeing a lot of these concepts that haven't really had the time to shine on a, I'm not going to say, obviously it's a real platform, right? But I'm just saying, from handheld to here, these models are really cool, and seeing their special effects go off in battle is really cool. I mean, it doesn't really break the mold of SMT, but I think a lot of people have never really gotten into SMT that are now going to give it a shot. Whether or not that's because, you know, they've experienced Persona and want to see what it's all about, or just because it's on the Switch. And, you know, either way, it doesn't matter to me. Basically, it's getting a lot of new people, a lot of new eyes on SMT that I think the series absolutely deserves. And with the year offering us that, and, you know, and Master, there's a lot of SMT available for folks to enjoy right now, which is great. And I'm sure that will just, you know, prime the pump for the inevitable Persona 6.
Absolutely. Dan, thank you so much for joining me to talk about Shin Megami Tensei 5 winning the Best RPG Award here on the All Things Nintendo podcast. Have a great rest of your day, buddy.
Thanks, you too.
Our next category is Best Platforming Game. Now, this is a category that Nintendo has often owned and has always become known for, thanks to games like Super Mario Brothers. And the genre has almost been synonymous with Nintendo since the 80s. So I knew I had to include this category. The nominees for Best Platforming Game on the All Things Nintendo podcast are Aeon Drive, Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, Aze and the Wild Masks, Little Nightmares 2, and Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury. And the winner for Best Platforming Game is Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury. To talk about why Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury is taking home the award for Best Platforming Game of 2021, it's Game Informer's associate editor, Wesley LeBlanc. Wesley, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How's it going? I'm excited to be here. This is my first appearance here. This
I know.
Is
fun. We're definitely going to have you back for another episode so we can have the audience get to know you a little bit better through things like first Nintendo game, favorite Nintendo game. I just told Dan that in the last award. But for this this time that you're appearing on the show, we are talking about why Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury deserves Best Platforming Game over other titles like Kaze and the Wild Masks, Little Nightmares 2, Crash Bandicoot 4, etc. So why, in your eyes, does this game rule over the rest of the field?
So, I mean, anyone that's played Super Mario 3D World knows that at the heart of it, and really any Mario game, is just, like, fun. That's what, you know, Nintendo specializes in, especially with the Mario franchise. And I don't know if there is a more fun platformer out there than Mario 3D World. There's tons of levels, tons of collectibles. There's the four-player element. And despite whatever the game throws at you, at the heart of it is that platforming that makes it, you know, such a standout game. You've got the cat suit, which adds a whole new level of, you know, platforming fun. You can now crawl up the wall using the claws, or you can completely avoid those and try to find different ways up. And it's just, it never gets old. It just goes and goes for hundreds of levels, and it's fun throughout.
The Mario 3D World is certainly one of the best games on the Wii U, and I'm so happy it finally made the leap to Switch. But for me, what really elevated this release as the best platforming game of the year is the entirely new content, which is Bowser's Fury, and a completely new side game that is kind of, you know, I would say that the Super Mario 3D World is still the entree here, but this is a phenomenal batch of mashed potatoes that to go alongside that steak that is awesome.
Yeah, that's an excellent way to put it. I didn't even mention that there's basically a whole nother, you know, game attached to this package, and it has the same platforming and same, you know, mechanics as the 3D World game with little extra things added in. And yeah, I think a side of mashed potatoes is a really great way to word it. I jumped from 3D World after 100%ing it right to Bowser's Fury and 100% of that. And it did not get old. Like, you know, you'd think maybe after playing 3D World for so long, Bowser's Fury wouldn't hold up, but it absolutely does as a new addition to this world of Mario.
Yeah, it's terrific. It adds a whole bunch of new wrinkles into the pre-existing Super Mario 3D kind of formula that has existed across several games now. It uses the gameplay from Mario 3D World, but instead of having like the fixed camera like Mario 3D World does have in its main game, it swings the camera behind the player while still retaining the mechanics and everything of the original game, which gives you some really cool different ways to approach these power-ups that they give you in the game. And then also there's an inventory system, and then the ever-present Fury Bowser boss fight. It's an amazing package, a great game that is finally on the Switch after feeling like it was exiled on the Wii U, and I'm so happy it's over here. Wesley, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about why this game is the best platforming game on the Switch from this year. Have a great rest of your day.
Awesome, thank you.
When you think about Nintendo, you don't necessarily think sports games. Even in the heyday of sports genre in the early 90s, Sega Genesis was actually better known for its sports games. However, we have a surprisingly good crop of sports games that came to Switch this year. So that is what our next category is, the best sports game of 2021. The nominees are Big Rumble Boxing Creed Champions, Knockout City, Mario Golf Super Rush, NBA 2K22 and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. And the winner for best sports game is Knockout City. To talk about the winner for best sports game, Knockout City, I'm joined by yet another person debuting on All Things Nintendo, Marcus Stewart, associate editor at Game Informer. How's it going?
Doing great. What took you so long? Get me on here. What the hell, man?
Been looking for excuses, and we will have you back for a full episode at some time in the near future. We'll do the whole rigmarole of introducing you to the audience. But until then, I want to know, because I believe you're a fellow Knockout City enthusiast. I was actually very surprised by this game when it came out, how much I liked it. But I want to know from your perspective, why is Knockout City the best sports game on Switch in 2021?
You know, as someone that prefers, like, not a big sports guy, but loves, like, goofy, dumb sports things, generally, this pretty much checked all those boxes. For one, I love dodgeball, and I've always thought that dodgeball was, like, horribly underrepresented in video games. So to see EA kind of give Velen Studios a chance to make something with a sport that is not that popular, I think is pretty cool, and I think it paid off. It takes pretty much the inherent fun of dodgeball and then layers on a bunch of nonsense, like superpowers with the different balls and the wacky arenas, and even just the overall presentation with how stylized everything is. It's just a lot of fun. Like I said, like, dodgeball is just fun in itself, but give me, like, anti-gravity balls and stupid dumb stuff like that. It's all I need. I'm a simple man, Brian.
And it is a lot of fun. The way I always describe to people is it's like an arena shooter, but dodgeballs are replacing all the guns. And it's really fun. It's easy to jump in. It's quick to learn. And I'll be honest, like, it was such an unexpected success for me. I reviewed it for us, and I remember when I got the review assignment, I was like, it looks fun, but it also looks like it could be a disaster. It looks like it could be a bad game, and I'm not going to have any fun playing this game. Like, I think it had a high failure rate, and to my surprise, and a pleasant surprise, Velen Studios, I think, knocked it out of the park. I think they provided constant updates, even from the state in which I reviewed it, and it's continued to get better and better, and they've had a lot of really fun maps, a lot of really fun power-ups, as you had mentioned, and I really do think it's the best sports game, not only on Switch, but in general this year.
For sure, and I had the same reaction to you, because I previewed this game and went into it with the same kind of tempered expectations and walked away like, there's something here, I think. And I'm really happy to see that it's turned out as well as it has, and that they've continued to update it with all the different, I guess, seasons throughout the year. Doesn't seem like they're slowing down anytime soon, which is great. The game's pretty much everywhere right now, but, like, being able to play it on Switch and take a really fun dodgeball game with you is ideal. Don't throw your Switch, though, like, it's a dodgeball.
And the fun thing is it's actually crossplay. So if your friend has it on PC or Xbox, you can actually play it with them, even if you're on Switch. Though I would highly recommend a wired connection if possible on the Switch. I know the OLED model has that. And if you don't have the OLED model and you still want to play a wired connection, you can do what I do and buy an adapter that goes into your USB and allows for an Ethernet port to plug in. But, Marcus, I think that's a great look at why Knockout City is the best sports game of 2021 on Nintendo Switch through the All Things Nintendo podcast. Marcus, thanks so much for joining me, and we'll have you on again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
A few weeks ago, I had an episode with Jill Grote for the eShop Gems of the Year. And as you know, if you listen to this podcast, I do an eShop gem of the week every single week. And I love indie games, and I wanted to highlight the best indie games that came out this year in a way beyond the eShop Gems of the Year episode a few weeks ago. So I made sure to include a best indie game category, and we have arrived at it right now. Let's get to the nominees. Axiom Verge 2, Death's Door, Dodgeball Academia, Spelunky 2, and Unsighted. And the winner for best indie game, Death's Door. Joining me to chat about the winner of the best indie game, Death's Door, is creative director at Game Informer, Jeff Akervik. Jeff, how's it going?
Hey, Brian. Going well. How are you doing?
Doing great. Just hammering out this award show. I think that we're doing a great job of highlighting a bunch of the best games that came to Switch this year. And one of those games is Death's Door, a game that, if I'm not mistaken, is your overall game of the year.
Well, I mean, I guess I could say with the qualifier, Brian, that with this, I do not play nearly as many games as the editors of Game Informer do, but from the games that I have played that came out in calendar year 2021, yeah, Death's Door, hands down, has been my absolute favorite. I'm not a huge fan of, dare I say, difficult games, although I'm sure some Soulsborne fans will scoff at that comment. I found this game to be a challenge for me, but it was the way that they've structured this game, gameplay-wise, art style, music, I mean, just the atmosphere, everything, it was hard for me to ever put it down, and I was able to kind of finish the whole thing. I absolutely loved it.
And I've been saying since day one, when this originally came out, I believe it was just PC and Xbox, that this is one of those games that is perfect for Switch.
Yes.
And it appeals to the Zelda fan in everyone, I feel like. If there's one thing this game takes inspiration from, it's Zelda. And then, as you mentioned, Soulsborne stuff, there's a little bit of that mixed in into the recipe as well.
I definitely don't want to, you know, give anyone the false impression that this is anything like a Dark Souls or a Bloodborne type, you know, or even a game like Returnal, right, that is definitely known for their difficulty. But I'd say that there's definitely enough of a challenge here to keep people on their toes without it being, I think, easy. I think, you know, Zelda games definitely get a rap, for better or for worse, of being relatively easy by and large. I found Death's Door to be challenging enough to not be frustrating for me. And I think that's kind of been the appeal of it for, I think the audience at large, for anyone who's played this game. But yeah, you're right, Brian. I mean, it has so many similarities to kind of the Legend of Zelda series, which obviously I'm an unabashed Legend of Zelda fan. So many of those things that Death's Door does, and it does it incredibly well, are many things I think it takes from Legend of Zelda series, but kind of like gives its own little twist, kind of make it its own kind of unique aspect of the game. I think it does it with great effect.
Absolutely. It's an amazing game. I've had a blast with it. And really, every game in this nominee list that I read off right before we kicked this part off is definitely worth checking out. Particular shout out to Spelunky 2, which came to Switch this year. And I could not stop playing it when I was reviewing it for PS5 or PS4. Whenever it came out, I was reviewing it for PlayStation. And I'm glad it's finally on Switch. I picked it up because that is a game that I wanted to have on the go. But at the end of the day, Death's Door is the best indie game of 2021 on the All Things Nintendo podcast. Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk about Death's Door.
No problem, Brian. Thanks for chatting.
While Nintendo may be known for its couch co-op, its couch multiplayer, it's always struggled and paled in comparison to the PlayStations and the Xboxes of the world when it comes to online multiplayer. However, Nintendo has recently made a push into the online multiplayer realm more and more, investing more in its servers and charging, quite frankly, for access to its online multiplayer. So while some of these games in the best multiplayer category do have couch co-op or online multiplayer, this is kind of combining all of those together into one category for best multiplayer. Here are the nominees: Knockout City, Mario Golf Super Rush, Mario Party Superstars, Pokemon Unite, WarioWare Get It Together. And the winner for best multiplayer is Pokemon Unite. And now to talk about why Pokemon Unite is taking home this award, here is video editor at Game Informer, Alex Van Aken. Alex, how's it going?
Hey, Brian, I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing great. Just churning through these awards, recognizing some of the best games of 2021. And one of those games is a game that is very near and dear to your heart, Pokemon Unite.
Yes.
Talk to me about what makes this game so great and why it deserves the award for best multiplayer.
Sure. I think Pokemon Unite number one is just a great introduction to MOBA games, multiplayer online battle arenas, mm-hmm. but nobody calls them that. They are these, you know, usually 5v5 multiplayer games where you are simultaneously fighting other players, like actual players, and also typically they're referred to as creeps or, you know, mobs, like just these smaller AI controlled characters that you essentially farm XP and money from. And then as each team plays throughout the match, as you kill those creeps and other players, you gain XP and you get to level up. And in this case, in Pokemon Unite's case, you get to evolve your Pokemon. And there are a lot of Pokemon to choose from. I think right now in the game, there's about 26. The game launched with 20 back in July. So, I mean, that just goes to show you there's a lot of post-launch support for this game. I think that number actually just went up. I think they just released another character.
Yeah, Dragonite.
Yeah. So, like, Pokemon Unite is firing on all cylinders, in my opinion. I think, you know, this year has been had a lot of really good multiplayer games for Switch. You know, Mario Golf. I think you had mentioned Knockout City was one of the runner-ups. Mm-hmm. I think what Unite does is there's something for everybody in Unite, right? Like, so if you're just a core Pokemon fan, you've never played a MOBA before. If you just want to come and play the game and see your favorite Pokemon in a new light, in a 3D, you know, you are very much controlling. Okay, if I press this button, I'm gonna do Flamethrower as Charmeleon, or I'm gonna do Fire Punch as Charizard. If I press these two buttons together, I'm gonna do Seismic Slam. Like, you get more control of the actual Pokemon than most games in the series, and I think there's something really cool about that for Pokemon fans, especially just getting to play out your favorite characters in real time against other Pokemon and not from, you know, kind of a backseat turn-based perspective. You know, I think that's really valuable for Pokemon fans. And also on the other side of things, if you're just a MOBA fan and you want something that's, you know, kind of chill but also offers like a competitive edge, if you want to have that via like ranked play, then you can get into this really cool MOBA that, and MOBAs live and die by their rosters, I would say. And what better way to have a great roster than to pull from Pokemon, right? Like, those are iconic characters.
For sure.
So,
and they keep adding more and more characters, as you'd indicated. And it's looking like there's no signs of slowing down. It's looking like 2022 is going to be full speed ahead for Pokemon Unite. Alex, yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about Pokemon Unite, winning best multiplayer here on All Things Nintendo.
Bye. Thank you.
This year, Nintendo has had more than its fair share of remakes and remasters appear on the Switch. While not all of them have been awesome, many of them have lived up to our standards and helped us recapture what we remember our favorite games playing like back when we played them for the first time. It's so great to have these games on Switch, and that's why I wanted to dedicate a category to the best remake or remaster of 2021. Here are the nominees. The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword HD. Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne HD Remaster. Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury. And Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania. And the winner is Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury. Now to once again talk about Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury, this time about the best remake or remaster. Wesley LeBlanc, welcome back.
Hello. I'm very excited to talk more Mario.
We have the first reappearance on this episode. I don't know if we're going to have any more later on, but yeah, Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury, taking home its second award of the show. And I think it's very well deserved because it's, pretty decent field for the remakes and remasters this year, but I think that this is just the epitome of what a great remaster does, because it adds like that whole new side content that we were talking about before.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they could have easily charged, you know, the usual 60 and just given us 3D World, and I think people would have, you know, maybe not as been as happy with the product, but they definitely still would have bought it because it's one of the best Mario games out there. But for Nintendo to throw in this entire, you know, side game, Bowser's Fury, that's a new take on the Mario formula, is super exciting. Not to mention, you know, is this their test bed for a new type of Mario game? And it's super exciting to play that and see, you know, Nintendo kind of tinker around with the formula they've been, you know, they like to update every 10 years or so.
And focusing in on Super Mario 3D World as a remaster, it does add, like, it's largely faithful to the Wii U version, but it does add a few small things and then one big thing that really makes it the best version of this game. It's like small things like the characters move faster this time around. But the big thing for me is online multiplayer, which was always a sore spot for me with the original release. I hated that it was only couch co-op, but this time you can play online, which is a huge boom. I actually played through it twice, once on my own and then once with a friend on over Nintendo Switch Online.
Yeah, the online is such a huge component, especially, you know, with everything going on in the world right now. It's not necessarily easy to have three other people over on your couch to play games. So being able to play with three other people online makes a world of difference with this game, because honestly, in my opinion, this game becomes a totally different Mario game when you have three other people. It's much more chaotic. You can kind of turn it into a competition. You've got people betraying you or running off stage, doing all kinds of, you know, fun and zany things. And that four-player online co-op experience really elevates the base game, in my opinion.
And also, in my opinion, Super Mario 3D World has some of the best levels in any Mario game.
Yes.
I think they're super fun, has amazing flow to the level. It gives you different options on how to approach different parts of the stages. And it has some amazing hidden collectibles and puzzles to solve. And I think all that leads me to be super grateful that it's finally free from the confines of the Wii U and is brought to just a substantially wider audience with the Switch. Wesley, thank you so much for coming on again to talk about why
Absolutely.
Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury is worthy of this award. Take care and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, our next category is Best Content Updates. Now, this is highlighting games that either did come out this year or have come out in a previous year, but received ongoing updates and new content throughout 2021. The nominees are Animal Crossing New Horizons, Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, Pokemon Go, Pokemon Unite, and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. The winner for Best Content Updates is Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Of course, if we're going to talk Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, I had to invite the big guy back, Alex Stadnick.
You know
Welcome
what it
back.
Is. Hello, hello. This is, anytime you call me for this, Shay, I'm always here. I love this show very much.
Well, I appreciate you for coming on, bringing the enthusiasm, the hype, and I know you're going to be excited because we are talking about Super Smash Bros. Ultimate winning the award for Best Content Updates of 2021 through the All Things Nintendo podcast. It was a pretty heavily contested category. Some of these categories are not very heavily contested. I'll be completely candid there. This one had a couple of heavy hitters. I mean, we had Pokemon Go and Pokemon Unite, which are just consistently updated. Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity had a big expansion. Animal Crossing New Horizons, I think, was the hottest contender here with that big 2.0 update and then the Happy Home Paradise expansion. But in the end, we had to give it to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Alex, why is Smash Ultimate's DLC from 2021 the best content updates on Switch this year?
Ryan Shay, it's because everyone's here. Look at that thing. I know some people, I think some people would look at 2020 for and sooner when they think of the Smash Pass being like at its biggest. We got Steve and Sephiroth in 2020, right? But the main man is here finally. Sora making dreams come true in October, gracing Switches everywhere. And I know I lost my mind when that came out. Kazuya and Pyra and Mythra came out this year as well. Shout out to Kazuya. I don't really love Pyra and Mythra, but I think they're good characters. They're just not for me. And there's just I think we talked about it when I was on the show a few weeks ago, right, about Smash and just the legacy that Ultimate has built and to culminate with Sora finally coming to Smash. I literally don't know, other than maybe like Goku or like Geno coming to it. Like, I don't know of any other characters that you'd want to end such an illustrious, amazing game with. And you know,
I feel like Sora is a bigger get than Geno even.
Yo,
like
yeah,
Goku.
I think so, yeah. But
Goku may have rivaled Sora, but I think Sora was like the second biggest one they could have done. I think that's bigger than Master Chief even.
Yeah, I think for this audience, I agree. Maybe with Infinite where it is now, maybe that would have been a little bit more in contention. But I just, especially, and I think we talked about this too, but like Smash characters are hit or miss, right? Either they're fantastic or they're just kind of in the background. Like, you know, everyone has opinions, right? But I think universally Sora was pretty loved, which like for me, the battle was getting Sora in, even if he didn't play or wasn't that fun to play. It's like, cool, he's still in this game, but he's amazing. Like, he's definitely in my rotation now of characters that I love using. And it's always cool to, you know, each character gets a stage with them when they get introduced to the show, right? And Hollow Bastion joined with Sora. And while it doesn't have the Disney stuff, it is still really cool just to have that in the background while you're just slaying people and taking stock, you know?
And every release comes with all kinds of music and Mii costumes and everything. So yeah, there's just so much to every release that Smash gave us. And to a lot of people's points about the reveals, those are even such giant events for so many people. Like, people were excited for the Animal Crossing New Horizons Direct that they did a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if anything can compare to the hype of that final character reveal that ultimately ended up being Sora. But man, just I feel like the world stopped when that stream was happening.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's funny you bring that up too, because I kind of, looking back at this now, I feel like the reveals were bigger than the actual releases. I feel like maybe not everyone played, like, you know, shout out to Min Min, but I don't know if anyone's getting hyped for Min Min like they are, like Sora and stuff, right? But like, I feel like it didn't matter how lapsed you were in Ultimate, right? You were there for those. If you had any sort of fandom, you were there for those reveals, because there was a wholesome, quirky nature to Sakurai and his team doing them from, you know, from his office. Like, you know, he'd have those little quips here and there, and the trailers were always fantastic. Like, I like Kazuya, but Kazuya's trailer was the best part of Kazuya, right? Him throwing Kirby off and Kirby keep coming up the volcano or whatever. Like, I think that's the stuff people are going to remember, which is not to take away from the actual character, because those take a lot of work, and balancing the meta to make those work is a huge challenge, which is why we only got X amount of characters that we did, right? But it is, it's just such a love letter to video games that it is, I get happy chills every time I think about it.
And it I feel like it was the perfect ending to the most ambitious post-launch content plan that Nintendo has ever done. And it's only fitting that it takes home the award for best content update from this podcast. Alex, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to talk Smash Ultimate once again on the All Things Nintendo podcast. Have a great rest of your day, buddy.
You as well. And thank you for inviting me on behalf of Sakurai and Nintendo. I'm happy to accept this award.
All right, we are heading full speed towards the end of our awards here. Three left. First of which is the most wanted game for Switch. Now, this is a category that's very near and dear to my heart, because every time a game comes out that I think could run on Switch, I want it on Switch because I want to be able to take that game on the go. And there are certain games that definitely lend themselves more where you're like, wow, this would be really great on Switch, whether it's because the audience would match up so perfectly or because it would just be amazing to have it on the go. So here we are, the most wanted game for Switch. The nominees are Kena, Bridge of Spirits, Inscription, Mass Effect Legendary Edition, Persona 5 Royal, and Solar Ash. And the most wanted game for Switch on the All Things Nintendo podcast is Persona 5 Royal. And to talk about why Persona 5 Royal would be such a perfect fit for Switch, it's GI's own associate editor, Jay Guisao. Jay, how's it going today?
Hello. How's it going?
It's going great. This is your first appearance on All Things Nintendo, and we'll definitely have you back for a full episode. But for today, I just want to know why you think Persona 5 Royal would be a perfect fit for Switch.
Oh my gosh. Like, it's I'm grateful that you brought me on to talk about it, because Persona 5 Royal is definitely one of my favorite games of all time. And when it originally came out, I think it came out, what, like sort of at the beginning of the pandemic, right? I didn't really get a chance to play it until that summer. And I just like completely lost myself playing it all over again, like another 200 hours. And I just think, one, right, it's kind of a no-brainer because, one, you'll have all of these players who play on Switch who have never played it before that'll finally get a chance to if it comes to Switch. So there's already like that, right? Like you have more JRPG fans who would get an opportunity to play it. But I mean, Joker's in Smash, right? Persona 5 Strikers is on Switch. Like, I don't know. It just feels a little bit like a no-brainer. Like this game should be on there. And here's a small side tidbit for that, right? I have an OLED screen on my laptop, and when I went back to play Persona 4 Golden, I mean, it was just gorgeous because, you know, Persona is known for its style and its vibrancy, and its beautiful color palette. And I think like Persona 5, especially Royal, takes that style and that flair to the next level. And so to see that on like an OLED Switch, right, and to have that on the go, like when I was playing Royal, you know, I kept thinking, like, when I wasn't playing, all I was thinking about was like, I need to play this game. And so if it was to be on Switch, I could play it at any time, right? I can go to work and be on the train like playing it. I can go to school and be on the bus playing it. You know, you bring it to the airport when you're on a flight. I just feel personally, when I was playing, I couldn't be away from that game. And I think a lot of JRPG fans and Switch fans in general would be excited and probably feel the same way about it. There's just nothing else like that game, just because it sort of checks all the boxes, right? You have dungeon crawling, you have like turn-based action, you have some sort of like life sim
Yeah, the social mechanics are so engaging.
It's so good. Like all the characters are just so like well fleshed out. Like it's just wild to think like all of the work that must have gone into it. And I don't know. I think everyone should be playing this game. Like RPG fans or not, it's definitely one of my favorite games of all time, and I think it's one of the best games that's come out this century so far. So it's like it needs to be on Switch, like hands down. Like all those players need to be playing this game.
Absolutely. It is one of my favorite RPGs of all time. I've played through it twice, if you count Persona 5 Vanilla back in 2017. Right. And then, of course, I reviewed it for us in 2020. Mm-hmm. But I would absolutely go through the 120-hour plus playtime one more time if it came to Switch. I think it is just phenomenal. My other favorite RPG, which is Final Fantasy X, is already on Switch. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have both of those on the go. Jay, thank you so much for joining me to talk about Persona 5 Royal.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we have reached the end of our awards. We have two left, and they are big ones. First up is the best third-party game. Now, Nintendo has always been known for churning out amazing first-party titles, but these are the games that came from publishers other than Nintendo. And the nominees are Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection, Life is Strange True Colors, Little Nightmares 2, Persona 5 Strikers, and Shin Megami Tensei 5. And the winner for best third-party game is Life is Strange True Colors. And joining me now to talk about the winner of the best third-party game on Switch in 2021, K-Star herself, Kim Wallace. How's it going, Kim?
Good, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so Life is Strange True Colors, taking home the title of best third-party game this year. Why is Life is Strange True Colors so great?
I mean, I think Deck 9 did an amazing job bringing us a fantastic, well-written protagonist in Alex Chen. She's somebody you root for, you want to see her succeed, and I think what they do so well is they're able to craft her story in a very believable way and make this character just very charming and endearing. Like, they get sarcasm right in a way that a lot of games can't pull off. And the performance by Erica More is just amazing. You know, I think
Erica More won our best performance overall at Game Informer.
Yeah, she did, because it's that good. Heyo. I mean, I think what it does very well is it brings you to this small town of Haven Springs, and you're basically learning about you're getting to learn about the community, the people within it, and Alex is kind of sitting there also at a crossroads in her life where she wants to decide what she wants to do, who she wants to be. And so she's at a very big turning point in her life, and this small community takes her in, and Alex has never really had much of a family. She's grown up with in foster care, and I think the game does a really good job of showing how difficult the foster care system can be on a young child. And then, you know, she finds this community, and what does that mean? And I think what it does well is it brings out a lot of issues within the community. Sometimes having that protective nature is a good thing. Other times everybody's up in your business and can be trying to tell you what to do, and that's not always the great thing. But on top of all this, it has like this mystery surrounding her brother and an accident that happens. And so you're kind of playing detective and trying to figure out what's going on there. But you're also, like I said, dealing with the emotional complexities that come with Alex, who's in her, you know, young 20s. It's like the oldest Life is Strange protagonist we've had so far. And I think that's always a difficult point at anyone's life of like figuring out, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And you get to make that choice for her, which is really compelling on top of everything else, of deciding what direction she'll go in. And there's no right or wrong answers with it. I think it's just really powerful the way that Deck Nine has that all come together in the end, with her power not being such a supernatural power. She has the ability to kind of read minds and empathize with people and decide if she wants to, you know, use some of that information to benefit people or even take away their pain, which becomes an interesting dilemma. Do people need their pain to like sort through and, you know, their problems and come out better? Or is it better that they don't feel it at all? And that becomes a very interesting question that you have to navigate in the game, as well as like the burden of taking on other people's pain. How much do you give yourself of people? So I feel like it took the series in very interesting new places. And I didn't think I'd ever find like a character that I liked as much as, well, characters as much as I liked in that first season with Max and Chloe. But Alex is hands down, like I said, the best protagonist we've had in years. And she has very cool people around her to bring that out with her friends, Ryan, who's just a big dork, and Steph, who's just the coolest girl in the world because she is a dungeon master, but she's also a DJ. She also plays drums. What can that girl not do? So you also get to decide if there's love going on there between her. She can pick between Steph and Ryan. So like I said, it has all the stuff, the choices that we've come to love about the series, but I felt like it did it in a really realistic, authentic way. And I didn't see some of those twists coming, and the way the whole story, like I said, comes together using that small town is very, very interesting and worth your time if you haven't played it. It's very, very good.
You know, I didn't expect going into these awards for the best third-party game on Switch to be a narrative adventure-style game, but here we are. I mean, for the writing, for the powerful storytelling, for the performance, and for all the cool choices that you can as a player make for all these characters, I think Life is Strange True Colors is a pretty solid pick for the best third-party game of 2021 on the Nintendo Switch. Kim, thank you so much for your time and for explaining to the listeners why this game is taking home this award. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
All right, here we are, the final award of this episode. This is All Things Nintendo, so we are celebrating the best that Nintendo had to offer in the year 2021. This is the award for the best Nintendo game. The nominees are Mario Party Superstars, Metroid Dread, New Pokemon Snap, Pokemon Unite, and Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury. And the winner for the best Nintendo game of 2021 is Metroid Dread. That is right, Metroid Dread takes home the award on All Things Nintendo for the best Nintendo game of 2021. You already know what we're gonna do. We're bringing Ben Reeves back on to talk about it. Ben.
That's right. You thought you'd got rid of me, Brian.
I did, and now here you are telling me whether or not you agree with this pick. Metroid Dread, best Nintendo game of the year.
No, boo! Why'd you do this? Yeah, of course. Of course this is the right call. In some ways, not really even a competition, although, you know, there's plenty of good games on the Switch. Like, by and large, hands down, I feel like Metroid Dread was the winner, for sure.
You know, I would agree with you. 2017, I think, was the most contentious year for this category, which, of course, the podcast did not exist back then. But that was the year we had both Breath of the Wild and Super Mario Odyssey. We did not quite have that this time around. Obviously, Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury was a great game. It took home two awards. New Pokemon Snap was something that people were waiting a long time for. And there were a couple other great games in this category. But I feel like there was no way around giving Metroid Dread this. It was the game that players had been waiting for a decade and a half. And it finally came out and it absolutely delivered.
For sure. Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey, because both of those games did new things with those franchises. You know, they held true to the spirit of what those games and what Mario and what Zelda were always about, but they definitely felt fresh in a lot of ways. And in a way, Metroid Dread feels like it's kind of doing the reverse of that, where it's giving you exactly what you've always loved about the series. And, you know, I can't argue with that, because that formula still holds up. We talked about it earlier in the show, just how fun it is to play. It's maybe a little bit harder than some of the previous games, but I can't resist going into a new area and slowly finding upgrades, and then, you know, ooh, now I have the grapple beam, so I can get over to, you know, and wander back to the other side of the map and get into that area I couldn't get into before. It's hard to resist.
How many times have you played Metroid Dread? Is it just the once?
I started up a second, like, hard playthrough.
How's that treating you?
It's good. Yeah, we talked about the difficulty earlier. When you really know what you're doing and know how the bosses function, it's not really that much harder. Sure, you take hits a little bit harder and you have to dish out a little bit more damage to take down a boss, but it's definitely doable. If people are looking for more Dread, I would recommend checking it out on the harder difficulty. It's a fun experience for sure. And it's, you know, going back to more of the same, like, it's going to be interesting to see where they take this franchise now. And we're not going to talk about any spoilers, but they definitely deliver some things and kind of end. It feels like the end of an era for this version of Metroid in a cool way. And I'm excited to see where it goes. And I'm also happy that we got what we got.
Well, they were saying in the lead up to the release, like, this was the day after it was announced, I was on a call with Sakamoto at Nintendo, and he was talking, who's been a producer or designer of the Metroid series since the 80s. And he was saying this was the conclusion to, like, this arc that started with the very first Metroid back on the NES. And so in that very spirit, like, you're right, it's going to be interesting to see where they take it. And they have said that, like, they do have additional plans for this series. And I can't wait to see what that is, because Metroid Dread is phenomenal and absolutely deserving of the best Nintendo game of 2021. Ben, let's take one last break, and you're going to stick around. And when we come back, we will close out with Definitive Ranking and the eShop Gem of the Week. Okay, it's been a long show of awards and recognition and just rattling off the best games of the year. Now we're going to jump into Definitive Ranking, which, Ben, I think when you made your last appearance, which was the very first episode of All Things Nintendo, Definitive Ranking was not a thing. But so for your information and for the information of anybody who's listening to the show for the first time, it is a recurring segment where we take a Nintendo topic and give our personal top five lists. And since the big winner of the first annual All Things Nintendo Awards was Metroid Dread, and we're celebrating Metroid right now, I want to talk about each of our top five Metroid upgrades. So Ben, I'm going to let you go first. Just start at five. Give me a sentence or two about each one and just go right on down the list.
Sure. Yeah, this is an interesting idea because upgrades, there's so many to choose from. And number five, just going right off the bat, I'm going to go with Storm Missiles, which is an upgrade you get in Dread for the first time, where you can lock on to different characters and then shoot a barrage of missiles at them. I love anything where I can shoot like a barrage of missiles in any game. And this, it's just a really good, useful weapon to use against bosses or just normal enemies. And I really like it. I think it's a really fun upgrade that I hope that we see return again. And then for number four is the Ice Beam. You remember the Ice Beam, Brian?
I do remember the Ice Beam.
Yeah, no, the Ice Beam was great. You know, back even in the original Metroid, when you'd get the Ice Beam, you know, first of all, it's a fun weapon. It's fun to be able to freeze enemies in place. But it's also a very useful weapon in that you can freeze enemies and then use them as a stepping stone. So you can jump up into new areas. So I like that it doubles up. It's a weapon, but it's also a useful tool kind of a thing.
That's a good one.
So yeah, that's number four. Number three is the Spider Ball. Spider Ball was introduced in Metroid 2 for the first time for the Game Boy, but I don't think a ton of people played that. So people might remember it from like Metroid Prime or something. But yeah,
and
the
Samus
Spider
Returns, it came back.
That's true. Yeah. Of course, they brought it back for Samus Returns. But I'm a sucker for anything that lets me climb on walls and ceilings. I'm a huge Spider-Man fan, so maybe there's something there. But yeah, the Spider Ball is just very useful navigation tool and lets you, you know, feels like you're cheating because you're climbing up a sheer cliff and sneaking into an area you couldn't get to before. And then likewise, another very useful navigation tool is my number two, which is the Screw Attack. Screw attack, I should say, like the jump attack, you know, the one where you can like fly, you know, the Screw Attack adds the extra damage dealing to it. So you can just like fly through enemies while you're basically jumping infinitely and doing damage to people. So that's why I like the Screw Attack. Plus it's just so iconic.
It's also Samus's up B in Smash, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it has that, it's that classic, you know, S, lightning S looking thing. And I feel like it's almost like a unofficial symbol of the series in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's number two. And then number one, I debated like if I should pick something else, but it just feels like it should be number one is the Morph Ball. The first upgrade you ever get in Metroid is one of the most iconic things. It's just such a weird, unique upgrade. There's not a lot of games that let you turn into a ball. You know, it's so weird in that sense, but at the same time, it's super useful. You can turn into a ball. You can go into all these vents. Like there's nothing more iconic in my mind for Metroid than being able to turn into that Morph Ball.
I am shocked at how much overlap we have. Really? Like you said at the start, there's such a robust list of upgrades, and yet I'd say 3.5 of ours overlap.
Hmm.
Which is wild. So number five is one of the ones that does not overlap. I said the Omega Blaster, which if you've played Metroid Dread, it is the one of the very, very, very few ways you can defeat the Emmy robots.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's just super satisfying after they're hunting you all around to finally get this very limited upgrade. And then you go back and basically you're the hunter at that point. But you still have to have a little bit of skill in order to hit them. And it's very satisfying to just blow them away finally after all the hassle they give you. Number four, this is the half point that I'm saying for our overlap, the Spider Magnet. Mm. Pretty much the same reason that you gave, where it's like, yeah, like you can climb walls, specific walls, obviously, and kind of Spider-Man your way across a different part. Number three, same reasons you gave, the Ice Beam.
Mm-hmm.
I love that it combines the two elements, both navigation and action, that are like what Metroid is known for into one item. And then we'll just do number two and number one together. Screw Attack, number two, and Morph Ball, because it's so iconic, like you said, and it's just like the quintessential navigation tool, the Morph Ball is, where it's like, all right, there's a small little area, I can't get through it. Oh, now I can turn into a ball and suddenly you can roll right through it. And it's just one of Samus's most iconic moves that she can do. And I'm surprised at how much overlap we had there, but
I think that proves us the right answer.
I think so. I mean, it absolutely does. And originally I had Morph Ball lower on the list, but the more I thought about it, you're right. It just felt like the fitting number one on this list. But that's the way it works out sometimes. Sometimes these lists have so much overlap, and other times it's like the Animal Crossing Villagers list that I had with Margaret, where I think we may have had one overlap, if any. But that's the way the cookie crumbles, Ben Reeves.
That's
just
right.
Like your iconic catchphrase, which is...
It's Morphin' Ball time.
That's right. Let's go to the eShop Gem of the Week. Ben, you have a game that you have been dying to talk about. What is it?
That's right. It's Morphin' Ball time. Let's go. I'm a huge fan. Brian, don't laugh at me, but I'm a huge fan of Box Boy. You remember Box Boy?
I'm also a big fan of Box Boy. I love that game. The original one was on 3DS.
That's right. They released, I want to say, three different games on the 3DS. And now there's, you know, it's a couple years old. Came out in 2019, but there's a game called Box Boy and Box Girl on, and it's from HAL Laboratories. So, you know, the company that makes, you know, maybe most famous for the Kirby games. This is one of their smaller indie style projects. But, you know, just as an example for maybe people who aren't familiar with the Box Boy formula, you are literally this little box-like character. You're just a cube, or really a square, because it's a 2D game, side-scroller, and you can hold down a button and then produce boxes out of your own body, which sounds weird. And then you're creating these Tetris-like shapes and then using those in the environment to solve puzzles, a lot of puzzles that are basically like navigation challenges. So you might create little staircases up to a little area. And then Box Boy and Box Girl. So it's this puzzle-like gameplay, but it's also co-op because one of you can play as Box Boy and the other person can play as Box Girl, and you're both creating different shapes and solving puzzles. It's a really good time. If you like puzzles at all, you can play it single player, but I recommend diving in with a friend or a loved one and having a good time.
Yeah, and that series is so much fun. It has some light platforming elements, but like you said, it's mostly puzzle. And it's all like shape-based stuff.
Yeah. What are you waiting for?
$10. It's $10. It's a great deal. You'll get a lot of enjoyment out of it. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing. That's a really good pick. And I'm surprised it hasn't come up sooner. But I know you're a fan of Box Boy and Box Girl. So I'm glad you brought it to the table. I think former GI editor Kyle Hilliard is also a fan of that series, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Huge fan. I know he'll vouch for me. So... give him a shout out if you want to. Like, hey, has Ben lying to me? What the heck, man? He's like, nope. Box Boy and Box Girl is legit.
Ben, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I can't thank you enough for coming by, talking Metroid, talking Box Boy, Box Girl. And thank you so much to everyone for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can email me, allthingsnintendo@gameinformer.com. You can also hit me up at Brian P. Shea on Twitter and Instagram. Suggest something fun or ask a good question and maybe it'll pop up on an upcoming episode. You can also get in touch through the Game Informer community Discord, which you can access by subscribing to the Game Informer Twitch channel. And finally, if you wouldn't mind, throw All Things Nintendo a 5-star review, and if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button. Ben, where can people find you online?
I'm at Benjamin Reeves on Twitter if you want to give me a shout out.
Awesome.
Tell me it's Morphin' Ball time.
It's Morphin' Ball time. Please tweet him that. All right, that is our show for this week. Thank you all again for checking out All Things Nintendo. Take care, and we will see you next week.
Bye.